What I'd like to do is explore the sugya of saying a bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Before doing that, just by way of introduction, there's a really two powerful ideas connected that relate to this time of year. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, Sholin b'Hilchos HaPesach Kodom Pesach Shloshim Yom. This is a halacha we're supposed to start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. And then the Ramah says a fascinating thing. Uminag liknos chitim l'chalkom l'aniyim l'tzorach ha-Pesach. It's a mitzvah to give what we call maos chitim. What's maos chitim? We give money to poor people so they could buy, to make sure that they could have money for the Pesach Seder. So many of the Mefarshim are bothered by the Ramah's introduction or his connection of after the Shulchan Aruch says, we learn Hilchos Pesach, 30 days before Pesach, why does the Ramah then say, U minog liknos chitim? Meaning in Hebrew, grammar, what does the Vav mean? And. So somehow this is supposed to be related. And there's a minog to give money to poor people to make sure they could celebrate Pesach. Those are two wonderful minhagim, two wonderful halachos. One is I should learn Hilchos Pesach, and two is I should make sure that poor people have money. But why are those two connected? So there's one of the Bali Musar, the previous generation, Rav Galinsky, suggests the following really, really powerful answer. And he says it's a personal story. He lived during the time of World War II, during the time of Nazi Germany. And he describes at some point he escaped from Nazi Germany and he was in Vilna. And he was a serious Talmud Chacham, a guy who learned very, very seriously. He was a teenager at the time. And when he was in Vilna, it was arranged for him to have the opportunity to meet with Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski was the gadol at the time. And he was so excited, he was also very nervous to have the opportunity to sit down, have a one-on-one meeting with Rav Chaim Ozer. And it was the late 30s when the Holocaust is raging. And as he comes in to meet with Rav Chaim Ozer, he literally hadn't slept the night before. In his head, he was going through, like, what's Rav Chaim Ozer going to ask me? He's going to ask me what I'm learning. He was learning Yevamos at the time. He's going to ask me to share a Chiddush. He's going to ask me all these, you know, deep analytical questions about where he's holding and learning. And so he's trying to, in his head, the night before, Chazer, Yevamos, and he says literally he couldn't sleep that whole night. And he walks in to meet with Rav Chaim Ozer, and he's petrified. And Rav Chaim Ozer says he has three questions for him. And in his head, he's ready, okay, I'll share this chiddush with him, that chiddush with him. And the first question of Chaim Ozer asks him is, when's the last time you've seen your parents? And he looks at Rav Chaim Ozer and says, it's been 6 months. Again, we know at that time, it was not hearing from your parents was really, really concerning. So the second question of Chaim Ozer said, do you have a place to sleep? You're on the run, are you being taken care of, do you have a place to sleep? And the third question he asks him is, can I see your shoes? Because that was, if a person couldn't really afford much, your shoes were the first to go, and it was cold, and it was pretty treacherous out there. He wanted to make sure that he was taken care of. And as Rav Galinsky says at that time, I felt like I understood what the Ramah is telling us. To learn Torah is profound. It's beautiful. We know it's our lifeblood. We need to learn Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. But our focus can't exclusively be that I need to learn Hilchos Pesach. To prepare for Pesach means to think about other people. And that was the lesson of Chaim Ozer was explaining this Rav Galinsky. I could ask you questions about Yevamos. I could check in on your learning. But I want to know, as a person, are you cared for? As a person, are you okay? If we're not cared for as people, if we don't think about humanity, don't think about other people, then we're not fully prepared for Pesach. And I came across an idea, beautiful idea, in Rav Melech Biderman's Haggadah, where he wonders, this coming Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol. Right? There are a lot of reasons given for why we call it Shabbos HaGadol. But he gives this really, really fascinating explanation for why it's called Shabbos HaGadol. There are people who say, you know why it's called Shabbos HaGadol? Because what's the likelihood, if a person's preparing for Pesach, what tends to get overlooked in their preparations for Pesach? Shabbos. They're so busy preparing for Pesach that Shabbos tends to get the short end of the stick. And so some people say it's called Shabbos HaGadol, like as Musar to us, to remind us, don't forget Shabbos. You know, Pesach is really important, but Shabbos is pretty great also. Don't forget Shabbos. But Rav Melech Biderman says the opposite. He says it's possible that when you get to your house this Shabbos and your parents, whatever preparation looks like for the Siddurim, it's been a lot. And it's kind of annoying. For 8 days, you don't eat, you know, the way you want to eat with chametz. And in some families, those preparations start a week early already, right? And so you go to your pantry, and there's not much food there, right? And Shabbos comes, and you feel like, you know, your parents like kind of threw together some leftovers, some scraps. And Shabbos can be a little bit neglected. And so Rav Biderman says, you know what godless is? You know, to be a gadol is not to be disappointed by that, not to be upset about it. When you get to the Shabbos table, this Shabbos, if the food is perhaps not what you would like on a regular Shabbos, for you guys especially, right? You've been yeshiva for months and you're home and you know you love like a gala feast compared to everything you've had before, and you get to the Shabbos table and all of a sudden it's perhaps not exactly what you had in mind. So our natural reaction could be to be disappointed, even to be disappointed for Shabbos. And Shabbos HaGadol, the message is godless, is to be mevater, to say, that's okay. My life will go on. My parents are working very hard. They love me dearly. They love Shabbos dearly. But in everything that they're juggling, perhaps they weren't able to prepare as much for Shabbos as possible. And the mussar for us is not that Shabbos shouldn't be neglected, but that we shouldn't get overly caught up on, is this enough? We should be mevater on even on the Shabbos food. That's Shabbos HaGadol. And again, the two ideas being linked together is that we are defined as people by the sensitivity we show to other people. To be great, to enter into Pesach, is to be sensitive to the needs of other people. So we'll get back to that theme at the end, but it's just to set the framework for the question. The question is, if you look in your source sheet, we know we have a rule. Source number one, Amar of Yehud, Amar Shmuel, Kol Mitzvah Zvaracha Alein Over Lasiyas. And we have a rule, every time we do a mitzvah, we say a bracha over Lasiyas and before doing the mitzvah. And yet, what is the central mitzvah at the Haggadah? The central is Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim, right? Is the section of Magid. That is the centerpiece of the Haggadah. It's the time we spend the most, it's the part we spend the most time on. It is the prime mitzvah of Pesach, is Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim. And if we're always supposed to say a bracha before doing a mitzvah, where is the bracha? Why don't we say a bracha on Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim? Why don't we say bracha at the very beginning of Magid? Whenever you have a question, there are kind of two ways to look at it. Either the question is fundamentally flawed, or the question is a good question and I need an answer. So what does it mean the question is fundamentally? Is it true? If the question is why don't we say a bracha on Magid, is that assumption true? Is it true that we don't say a bracha at the beginning? That we don't say a bracha on Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim? So we're going to see three approaches. The first two approaches appear in the Me'iri. The Me'iri in source 2 tells us two different answers as to perhaps how we can see there actually is a bracha related to Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim. Any thoughts? Where would we say a bracha on Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim? At the end, what do you mean by that? Good, so at the end of Magid, we say the bracha of Asher Galanu. So it's not in the Me'iri, but we'll get to that in the Shibboleth HaLeket. Where else? Kiddush? Okay, so the Me'iri says something similar to that. If you look in source 2, the Me'iri says, Vazkaras Yitzias Mitzrayim Belele Psachim Ba'agada, the mention of Yitzias Mitzrayim in the Haggadah, Yesh Mishamazhir, Shalol Levarach Aleh Lefaneh, Vafa Pishesh Bracha Lachar, there are those who say not to say Bracha beforehand. Why? Shari Efsharlo Lismoch Al Emes Vemuna, Shekvar Beirach, Vachasim Bagal Yisrael. What's the Me'iri telling us? Where is the Bracha connected to the Haggadah? What? Right, Berachos Kriyas Shema. When we say the bracha after Shema of Emes Ve'emuna, what's one of the themes that really permeates that bracha? Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. We talk about how we left Mitzrayim. And the bracha culminates with Gal Yisrael, thank you Hashem for redeeming us. Redeeming us means taking us out of Mitzrayim. And so the Me'iri says the first bracha, perhaps, or the first answer for where we say a bracha on Magid is we say this Emes Ve'emuna. And that bracha works for the Haggadah as well. Now, the assumption of the Me'iri is that there are two concepts that we sometimes differentiate between, but he's assuming they're one and the same. We know there's a mitzvah of Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim, and there's also a concept of Zechiras Yitzes Mitzrayim. And so the Me'iri is assuming that those two go hand in hand. Right? It's not so crazy. The Rav is an idea that if you look in the Rambam does not codify a mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzes Mitzrayim. He tells us the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim, but he believes the two are combined, right? And that Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim, once a year, we're infused with like a huge concentration of Sipur Yitzes Mitzrayim. We intensely focus on the fact that we were taken out of Mitzrayim, and then throughout the year, we just do maintenance, right? It's a concept we know. We have a night of inspiration, and then the rest of the year of maintenance, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, is just a reminder of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. But the two are really one and the same. There is such an approach out there, and that's what the Me'iri assumes. The Me'iri assumes, therefore, when I say Emes V'emuna at Maariv, that bracha goes on Sipras Yitzias Mitzrayim later that night. Now, not everyone agrees to that, right? You may have learned Rav Chaim Soloveitchik has an idea that these two are totally different. There are three main differences between Sipras Yitzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. Anyone know the differences? Good. So, difference number one is that there's Derech She'elo Tshuva. Sipras Yitzias Mitzrayim requires an exchange. Zechira is just something I think. But Sipur means we discuss it together. That's one difference. Next difference. Sipur requires... So I think that's the Derech She'elo Tshuva. But the second difference is it's Maschil B'Gnos U'Mesayim B'Shevach. But I have to tell the whole story from beginning to end. Not just that we were taken out, but the story from beginning to end, that's the second difference. And the third difference is I require what's called Tamei HaMitzvah. I have to really understand the reason the mitzvah. And that, Rav Chaim says, is when Rav Gamliel says, Kol Shelo Amar Gimel Dvarim BePesach Lo Yatzei Yidei Chavos, and we have to mention Pesach Matzah Umar, we have to really explain them. And what's beautiful about Rav Chaim is if you take all of Magid, it basically fits into those 3 points. Right? Those 3 points about the whole thing is Derech Shelo Tshuva. So we have Ma'anishtana, Avadim Hayinu. We have Maschil B'Gnosu M'Sayim B'Shevach. We start with Avadim Hayinu. And then we have Rav Gamliel. So in other words, you have all these three main parts of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim make up Magid. But that idea of Rav Chaim, that these are two fundamentally different mitzvos, would not be consistent with the first answer in the Me'iri. Right? Because again, the Me'iri was assuming Emes V'Emuna can work for Magid, because they're one and the same, if you believe those are two totally independent mitzvos, that wouldn't work together. The Me'iri then gives a second answer. If you look at the last line of source 2, he says, Ella sheyesh cholkim umevarchim. What does that mean? What's yesh cholkim umevarchim? They're those who argue, and what do they say to do? Say a bracha. We in fact should say a bracha before Magid. It's not our minhag. It will not appear in any of your Haggadahs, Ashkenazi, Sephardi, it doesn't matter. You will not find that in your Haggadah. But in the Me'iri's Haggadah, and I don't think he paskins this way, but he at least quotes during his time, there were those who had a Haggadah that would say, to say a bracha, bracha ta Hashem al-kinam al-chalma asher, k'jam zavitzvanu, al-sipor yitzias mitzrayim. And there was such a shita out there. That's the second approach of the Me'iri, right? So far we have two approaches for where we could see perhaps there is a bracha on the Haggadah. The third approach is the Shibboleth HaLeket. And yes, you said this before. The Shibboleth HaLeket says, if you look in source 3, we won't go through it inside, but if you look through it, he says the bracha of Asher Galanu, which we say at the end of Magid, is actually the bracha on Magid. Now what's difficult about that answer? What does source 1 tell us? When are we supposed to say a berachos HaMitzvah? Over Lasiyasan. What does that mean? Before doing the action. So why would we say the bracha after Magid is done? I just finished telling this story. Right, so can you think of other examples where we say a berachos HaMitzvah after an action?
Ner Shabbos.
So Ner Shabbos is one. Tvila. Right? Those are really would be the two examples. When someone dips in the mikvah, and it's an obligation to dip in the mikvah. Not if someone has the practice to dip on Friday or daily, whatever that would be. You don't say a bracha on that. But let's say a convert. Someone's converting, they dip in the mikvah. So when do they say the bracha? Afterwards. When a woman dips in the mikvah, says the bracha afterwards. Why do they say the bracha afterwards? Because until then, they can't say the bracha. Right? A non-Jew can't say the bracha. Asher k'deshadim zavit tzivanu. It's not appropriate for them. So they're not personally able to say bracha till afterwards. Right? Ner Shabbos is a little more complicated, but it applies any time you can. If you wash, al n'tilas yadayim. So I don't say the bracha till afterwards. Again, the Mefarshim tried to discuss, maybe it's before drying, but I'm saying the bracha after I wash. Again, because until I wash, my hands are tamei. So I can't say the bracha beforehand. So in other words, if a person's not able to say the bracha till afterwards, that's what we do, say the bracha afterwards. How does that fit back to this question? Why would we say the bracha at the end of Magid? What would you say? But why? Say it again. Say it before the story. So what are we supposed to be doing when we're telling the story?
Reliving it.
Right, so the Chassam Sofer says it so beautifully. If we're supposed to be reliving the story, supposed to be reenacting the story, who am I at the beginning of Magid? I'm an Eved. I'm a slave. How could I say the bracha of Hashem, thank you for taking me out? I can't say that. I could only say the bracha after I'm actually freed. At the end of the story, I could say the bracha. Right, which again, it's a powerful halacha. The beautiful thing about halacha, it's not meant to like turn us into robots. On the contrary, it's actually supposed to infuse like feelings into us. Where so the idea of Magid is literally to create this feeling that we are reliving an experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We are reenacting the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. If we're really feeling that, then we can only say the bracha at the end. And even though halachically it's odd to say a bracha at the end, it's even inappropriate to say normally a bracha at the end. Here, if we're reliving it, that's why we would say it at the end. So again, those are three approaches for why we would say that perhaps there actually is a bracha on Sipur Yetzias time. If you look at source 4, the Darche Moshe, anyone know who wrote the Darche Moshe? The Ramah of Moshe Isserles. So he disagrees with Shibbolei Aleket. Because he says, Nira Detarch Levarach Asher Galanu, we do of course have to say the bracha of Asher Galanu. The nature of this bracha of Asher Galanu is not a berachas hamitzvah, he says. What kind of bracha is it? What? Yeah, it's a berachas hodah, perhaps. A bracha like we say anytime there's a nes. Right? Like we say shasa nisim when we light Hanukkah candles. That's not the berachas hamitzvah. When we light Hanukkah candles, the berachas hamitzvah is lahadlik ner shal Hanukkah. So here, he says it's not a, Asher Galanu is not a berachas hamitzvah. That shouldn't really work. So we've seen three opinions, but we've also pointed out each of the three opinions have their own question marks. The first opinion, the first answer, the Meiri, who says Emes Vemuna works for the Haggadah, has its question mark, because it's not so clear that those mitzvahs are one and the same. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim may not be one and the same. We saw a second answer, the Meiri, that in fact we say a bracha, but the reality is none of us have that in the Haggadah. That doesn't seem to be an opinion that really has wide acceptance. And then we saw the Shibbolei Aleket, that the bracha afterwards is really the bracha, but again, the Darkei Moshe says that's mischaracterizing the bracha of Asher Galanu. So there are two answers, two approaches. There are many approaches. We'll discuss two approaches as to why perhaps there's no bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And in each of the answers, hopefully, it A, is something to consider, and B, there are wider-ranging implications. The Maharal says there are certain times that we don't say brachos. He quotes source 5, the Beis Yosef. Vim tomar yivarach al bitol chametz. Ever sit and wonder, we're going to do a lot the day before Pesach. We're going to do bedikas chametz, we're going to do biur chametz, and we're going to do bitol chametz, right? We say a bracha on biur chametz, and that bracha is also supposed to work on bedikas chametz. But we don't say a bracha on bitol chametz. Why don't we say a bracha on bitol chametz? So that's what the Beis Yosef asks. Why not say a bracha on bitol chametz? We say a paragraph. Kol chamira v'chamia di'ika b'rishusei d'chazite d'ol chazite. Lehave hefker ka'afra da'ara. It should all become hefker. But we don't say a bracha. Why not? Anyone want to guess? Correct. So the Beis Yosef says, Yesh lomar, de'bitol have b'leiv. The concept of bittul is an internal action. It's something I do in my heart. V'ein mevarchim al dvarim shebalev. And I don't say a bracha whenever anything is balev. Right? There are other examples. People talk about Zechiras Amalek. I don't say a bracha on Zechiras Amalek because it's balev, maybe it's bapeh also, but there's no real action to it. How does that apply here? What's the main goal of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? Right, but ultimately to feel it, right? For it really to be in my heart. And if that's the goal, is really for it to be in my heart, then it doesn't warrant a bracha because it's like bitul chametz. I'll share an idea, a beautiful story that I saw in Rav Fran's Haggadah. Rav Fran tells a story of a Rosh Yeshiva who found himself Shabbos HaGadol in some small yeshuv in Israel. Not a very learned yeshuv, but he found himself in some yeshuv in Eretz Israel. And they asked him to give a Shabbos HaGadol drasha. Now this Rosh Yeshiva was going to give a Shabbos HaGadol drasha, looked at the crowd, again saw they weren't learned. They didn't want to give like, you know, a shtickle Torah with heavy lumdus. He said, I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a story of a Jew who was born in Austria, also relates to the Holocaust. And as a young child, this Jew was fortunate to escape through the Kinder transport. He escaped first to England, eventually made it to Eretz Yisrael and settled into Petach Tikva. But because he had been on the run during his, you know, younger days, he never had a regular yeshiva education. But this Jew, when he settled into Petach Tikva, he made it like his life mission to basically be the shamus in a shul. And he would make sure everything operated smoothly in the shul. There were shurim. It was always a good place for people to come and learn. And that was this, the avoda of this Jew who, again, had escaped from Nazi Germany. And somehow, this Jew all merited all of his children becoming Talmidei Chachamim. Like really, really impressive Talmidei Chachamim. And so when he passed away, this Rosh Yeshiva who's telling the story said, I was connected to one of his kids, and I went to Menachem Avil. And I asked one of the kids, for wonder, your father didn't have a yeshiva education. What was his merit? How was he so fortunate to have all of you such serious Talmidei Chachamim? And so one of the kids said, you know, a lot of times we take our parents for granted, right? A piece of advice, never take your parents for granted. But he said, we take our parents for granted. And so we never really thought about it much. But once I asked my father this question exactly, we're not boastful, we don't brag, but it's true, Baruch Hashem, we're all sitting and learning. And so I said, Dad, what was it? You're not learned. How is it that you were able to manage to raise all of your children to be so connected to Talmud Torah? And his father said, you know, when I was escaping from Austria, my father wanted to come with me. And he actually was supposed to come on the train, but there was a mistake with the passport and they wouldn't let him board the train. But as the train started to pull out of the station, my father ran alongside the train. And I heard him through an open window. He was screaming to me in Yiddish. I don't know Yiddish. Be a good Jew. Be a good Jew. And as the train started to accelerate, he tried to run as fast along with the train, yelling, be a good Jew, be a good Jew. And finally, my last image of my father was he tripped on a step on the platform and he's lying on the ground and he's screaming out to me, be a good Jew, be a good Jew. I never saw my father after that. But that message, what was so important to my father to be a good Jew, it wasn't a ketzos, it wasn't a Rav Chaim. It didn't teach me how to learn. And so, like you said, I'm not educated. But that message, that emotion that he conveyed to me, that passionate desire to be a good Jew, is something I've never forgotten. And so I made it my life mission to make sure to be a good Jew. And as you know, I always spent every day making sure that our shul was operational and people who wanted to come learn Torah had a place to learn and felt welcome. And clearly, that Misora, that which was in my father's heart, became etched into my heart. And somehow, Baruch Hashem, and I don't take it for granted, that was passed down to each of you, to each of my children. And this Rosh Yeshiva standing there in front of
me. There will be another AP Proctor training in room 3, this period 6. If you are around and you have not yet attended a training, please come to room 3. Thank you.
So this Rosh Yeshiva standing on Shabbos HaGadol said, that's the Avodah of Pesach. It's not. We don't have to all become Talmidei Chachamim. Again, it's a wonderful thing. We learn Hilchos Pesach, right? But at the same time, to have in our heart that internalized message of what it means really to be a Ben Chorin, but to appreciate, that's the Maharal. The Maharal saying that Sipur Yitzias and Chaim is a mitzvah shebalev. It's to work on our heart. We'll get to the compassionate side, but work on our heart to really understand the Mesorah of Klal Yisrael, to understand what it means to be a member of Klal Yisrael, but to really internalize it and make it part of our heart. So we don't say a bracha because it's not about an action, it's about an internal message. So that's the first answer for why there's no bracha on Magid. The second answer is the answer of the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes says something fascinating. If you look at source number 6, the Rokeach tells us Again, there is another category of mitzvos that we don't say a bracha on. Ein mevarchen al mitzvos miuchados la'am. Ein mevarchen el al mitzvos miuchados la'am Yisrael. We only say brachos on what kinds of mitzvos? Mitzvos that are unique to who? To Klal Yisrael. Why? Because what's the text of a bracha? Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, asher kedishanu b'mitzvosav. Hashem, you sanctified us. You made Klal Yisrael unique. If you made Klal Yisrael unique, we can only say a bracha on that which makes Klal Yisrael unique. So he says, the Rokeach, v'lo mitzvos shagam b'nei noach nitztav alein. We don't say a bracha on mitzvos that b'nei noach are also commanded on kemodinim. They also have an obligation to set a court system. So we don't say a bracha on a court system. That's not unique. Ma'ake. They also have to protect lives. So we wouldn't say a bracha on it. That's what the Rokeach says. There are other examples. But the Sas Emes says, if you think about what it means to be freed, and look at source 7. So the Gemara tells the following. Amalei Rav Nachman l'Daru Avdi. Rav Nachman said to his slave Daru, Avda demafik le'mare l'cheirus. A slave whose owner lets him go free, and not only does he let him go free, but v'yavle kaspa v'dahava. When he lets him go free, he gives him gold and silver. My boy lememarle. What would be the appropriate reaction of a slave? Again, not a Jew, anyone, a slave. What's the appropriate reaction? What would you say? What? Thankfulness. Ba amarle boy ladule l'shabuche. The slave says, I should thank the person. I would praise the person. So therefore, the Sas Emes puts this all together and says, the idea of being freed, what is the appropriate reaction to being freed? Expressing appreciation. Hakaras HaTov may have a Jewish motif to it, but is also a universal motif, right? I haven't been gone for that long. We know at the end of November, what happens each and every year in the United States of America? We have Thanksgiving, right? The idea of being appreciative is not uniquely Jewish. Again, there's a uniquely Jewish concept here, but it's not uniquely Jewish to be appreciative. The Sas Emes says we don't say a bracha on just expressing our gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because that's normal and that's natural to express our appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, even if that may feel, at least to me, a little bit deflating about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that no, it's just normal. Everyone would say thank you. Again, that's why we don't say a bracha on it. There still is a uniquely Jewish component to it. And that is that Pesach, Rabbi Kron, whose name is Pesach, points out, we often think about Pesach in the sense that Hashem passed over Batei Mitzrayim, right? That's one of the reasons why we call it Pesach. But what else does Pesach mean? So he suggests the Targum translates Pesach as having mercy or compassion. The essence of Pesach is to be merciful and compassionate, right? Go back to the stories at the beginning where we said what we work on, Maos Chitim, is to understand that part of preparing for Pesach is understanding that it's not just knowing the halachos, but knowing how to be a compassionate human being, knowing what it means to work on that sensitivity. And I'll just conclude with the story that Rabbi Kron tells. And it's one of these, you know, classic stories. It's one of these stories that you've heard one like it before, I'm sure. Nevertheless, it is still, I think, incredibly powerful. And Rabbi Kron tells his own personal story of when he was 21 years old, his father passed away. And he says he was the oldest child in his family. So he went from being a yeshiva bacher, someone who's just learning, to all of a sudden having to work with his mother, alongside his mother, to try to support many younger siblings. And he said at that time his entire life shifted its focus because he couldn't just sit and learn. He had to really grow up and all of a sudden take care of his family. And he says they were a very warm and caring community. He describes during Shiva, someone from his family went down to the basement and there was... The basement had been stocked with food that could last them for at least a month. The community was incredibly caring. But over time, as caring as they are, that burden of responsibility shifts back to you. And he says, you know, he tried to take on, he's a moel following his father's footsteps. He tried to do what he could to make ends meet. But one night he and his mother sat down together and they just weren't sure how they were going to be able to pay the bills. And he says they were fortunate shortly thereafter. A nice, generous man in the community, Mr. Israel, reached out to him and sat down with him and gave him an envelope with $2,000 in it, which this is the mid-60s, $2,000 went a long way, and said, I'd like to give this to you. And he said, "As much as you're right, we do need the finances. My mother and I don't want to be on the receiving end of tzedakah." So Mr. Israel said, it's not tzedakah, it's a loan. It's a loan without an end to the time limit. Whenever you're ready to pay it back on your own time, you'll pay it back, but I'm not giving it to you as tzedakah. It's a loan, and obviously we know to the recipient, makes a big difference in terms of feeling, you know, that sense of at least pride. We all sometimes take loans. We'll take the loan. They agreed to take the loan. And for the next year and a half, Baruch Hashem, as his mall business started to come together more, they were able to put aside money, a little bit of money each month, until they finally were able to accumulate the $2,000 and also feel like they were in a stable enough financial place. And he calls Mr. Israel's office, and he arranges with his secretary a time for him to come meet with Mr. Israel. And he sits down with Mr. Israel. They catch up a little bit. Mr. Israel asks what he's up to. He explains, you know, about the business, and thank God everything's going well. And he says, you know, in fact, thank God everything's going so well enough that here I have the $2,000. I want to return it to you. Thank you so much. And Mr. Israel looks at him and says, I can't take that money back. And Rai Krohn says, but that was the deal. You said it was a loan. So Mr. Israel said, it's true, it was a loan. But I don't want the money. Let me tell you a story. And again, as cliche as the stories are, they're cliche because of how true they are. He said, a number of years ago, I too was having a difficult time in business, and I wasn't sure how I was going to pay the bills. And there was someone in our community, Dr. Lowenstein, who lent me the money. And same thing happened, and when time came, I went to pay him back. And he said, I can't take the money, but it's true, it's a loan. I want you to give the money to someone else who will need it. And Mr. Israel says to Rai Krohn, same deal. You're going to pay this money back. I'm glad you have the money, but don't give it to me. Pay it forward. You're going to find someone else who is also going to come on hard times, and you're going to be able to help them. And that's the story of Pesach. Pesach is a time of compassion, right? The same pay it forward mentality, the same notion of Mida Keneged Mida, is Pesach is a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu had incredible compassion on us, right? We were slaves, and Hashem in his infinite compassion took us out of Mitzrayim. And so our responsibility from there is not only to appreciate that freedom, but to pay it forward and to recognize that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed us with being free, we have the achrayas to pass on that sense of compassion to other people. And again, that's what Maos Chitim is. Maos Chitim is passing on that compassion, that sensitivity to other people. That's what Rav Biederman says is Shabbos HaGadol, is showing compassion to those who are working so hard to prepare for Pesach that perhaps they didn't get to spend as much time preparing for Shabbos, but we show compassion, respect, and sensitivity. And that's what it means to be a Gadol, is to live a life of compassion, of sensitivity to other people. Mirtza Hashem, this year it should be a year of Geula, be a year of sensitivity and compassion to everyone around us.